Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Mfundisi, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Brother Zama. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Mfu. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. No complaints.
How's been your day, Mfu?
Oh, I've had a busy morning. Trying to figure out the car. Has some issues. I'm dealing with mechanical issues.
that for you, amanza mancane.
Pardon?
I'm saying that for you is small waters.
Small water.
Yeah, it's small waters.
Yeah, it's not a crisis. It's not a crisis.
Yeah.
It's something that can be developed very, within a week.
Yeah, no, fantastic, fantastic. Now, Pastor, as we go through this subject for the duration of this week, we begin by, going over the origins of this sin problem. Where did it start? Who caused it? How did we get involved? As the week progresses, we will then discuss its far-reaching effects, as well as if at all the problem can be actually eradicated, permanently. Now, before we go and get into the origins of sin, let's begin with the basic definition of sin. How do we define sin? How do we characterize it? What is sin?
Yeah, let me start with the definitions that the Bible gives to us. I'm going to give you four definitions that are given by the Bible itself.
Okay.
And the first one we find in 1 John chapter 3, verse 4, which says, "Whoever commits sin transgresses also the law, for sin is the transgression of the law." So the first definition is sin is the transgression of the law. This is the clearest and most basic definition. Now, this one does not tell us whether that sin has to be intentional and deliberate or accidental, but just a transgression of the law. And the second one, it's in Romans chapter 14, verse 23. It says, "But whoever has doubts is condemned if he eats, because the eating is not from faith. For whatever does not proceed from faith is sin." So the second definition is, "For whatever does not proceed from faith is sin." So basically, unbelief is sin. John chapter 16, verse 8 talks about the Holy Spirit, that the Holy Spirit will convict us of sin and of righteousness and of judgment. And in verse 9, it continues to say, "Concerning sin, because they do not believe in me." Unbelief basically means we do not trust God. We do not take him at his word. So the second definition of sin is unbelief. And the third definition we find in 1 John chapter 5, verse 17. It says, "All unrighteousness is sin, and there is a sin not unto death." But the first part there, all unrighteousness is sin. All wrongdoing is sin. And then the final one, James chapter 4, verse 17. "So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him it is sin."
Even if you're
so
not doing anything
wrong.
When we
don't get involved in doing good, we are sinning. When we sometimes we sometimes talk about sins of commission and sins of omission. So sometimes when we omit to do the right thing when we know we should do it, that is also sin. So those are the four basic definitions that I can give. I don't know if you'd like to comment, but I could also go into the terminology in terms of Hebrew in the Old Testament to show you the different usages in the Old Testament with regards to sin and maybe the levels. You know, some people will say, "Are all sins the same?" But maybe let me stop here for a while.
I think we'll actually come back to that, because I'm interested that we're saying that all sins are the same, but others would say, no, 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 there's weight. This one is more sinful than the other. But yeah, as you rightfully say, I think we'll deal with that later. Now, I'm quite curious about two issues that you mentioned. One, you said, you know, whoever knows not what to do and does not do it is sinning. That's the one. Quite curious about that. And also, with the second one, what was it, man? I thought I'd noted it here, but I see actually noted something else.
The second one, unbelief. So whatever does not proceed from faith is sin.
Oh, yes. Unbelief. Unbelief is sin. Please do expand on this too, because, you know, if a person still has a doubt about certain things and really is not like, nah, I can't be, no. Is he saving? Does he save? No, he cannot. Surely you cannot put that it cannot be put as a sin. I mean, that person is still, you know, in a valley of decision and they've not arrived at a point where they are convicted of this. Are you saying that they are taken to be a sinner for real?
I think maybe if I expand on this, I would have to go to Hebrews chapter 11, is it verse 6, that says, "For without faith, it is impossible to please God. For he who comes to him must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him." So you will have people who say, "Prove to me that God exists." But you see, the Bible from the very beginning in Genesis does not even try to prove the existence of God. We believe in God by faith. And so that's why he says, by faith, it is impossible to please God. Because now, if we have to prove God, then why do you need to believe? You don't need to believe if it can be proven, if the existence of God can be proven. But faith means that there is a gap where we cannot, you know, we cannot put God in a test tube, in a classroom, and say, when we mix iodine and this chemical, it will produce that. So he's not a test tube kind of.
Yeah, you know, Pastor, I hear you. I hear you. I hear you. And I'm actually thinking of Paul now, who encouraged us to, you know, I mean, Paul used to argue with, you know, the unbelievers and showing them. I mean, at some point he even talked to them about the unknown God, etc., etc. Surely, Pastor, everybody has got a journey. So if one would be afforded to, according to sin, because they have not yet believed, and so they are a sinner. Aren't we all sinners saved by grace? Even those who are believing in God, or for all have sinned and have fallen short of the glory of God, isn't it? So why would we pick on those who have not believed yet?
Yeah, Romans chapter 3, verse 23, all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. But I think this definition does not necessarily, cannot say 100% apply to people who do not yet believe in God. People who believe in God can have unbelief. Mm-hmm. The first sin, when is it Eve and Adam, they chose to deviate from what God has said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you read the spirit of prophecy, it will say it is not, the sin is not actually the fact that we did the wrong thing, but it is basically that we chose not to believe what God has said. When he said, the day you eat of this tree of the knowledge of good and evil, thou shalt surely die. Believe that.
However, Pastor, those ones, I think that the example of Adam and Eve, it was a clear transgression of the law, because the law was given and they transgressed the law. So that one is granted. They transgressed the law.
Yes.
So they effectively sinned. And I think that there's no question about it. Now, a person who simply just says, guys, I'm not convinced about this thing, that person has not necessarily sinned.
Well, I think God says, let us reason together.
Yes.
And he gives us room to grow our faith. He gives us evidence, you know, because there's evidence in the world, for example, even about the existence of God, you know.
Mm.
We can think if there's a calculator that is so organized, when you add 4 plus 3, it will always give you a 7. It's not going to deviate.
Mm.
When there's a watch and every 60 seconds equals a minute, every 60 minutes equals an hour, you know there's a designer to that. So there's evidence in this world that demands a verdict. And God gives us enough, sometimes gradually, progressively. You know, the way God dealt with Nebuchadnezzar, for example, you know, he put a dream within him, and he knows that that dream will need someone to come and interpret. And so the dream, for example, in Daniel chapter 2, is not given to Daniel, but it is put in Nebuchadnezzar so that Daniel can come and interpret, so that Nebuchadnezzar can believe in God.
Mm.
And then you find the thing, Nebuchadnezzar, in chapter 3, he has built a statue, and then they throw Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into the fire. But the same king sees the fourth, and he says, I am seeing four, and the fourth is like the Son of God. Who told him what the Son of God looked like? But now the interesting thing is this. The man who took Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into the fire, they were strong men, but they died in the fire. The king, when he realized that there was a fourth person in the fire who looked like the Son of God, he approached that fire and he was not consumed. Because, you know, God also knows when people are open to persuasion and they are honest. Because they are those who will doubt and they will be skeptical out of unbelief. Whatever reason you give, whatever evidence God gives, they will not believe. And we can talk about Pharaoh, for example, whom, you know, God revealed to him multiple times through the plagues that were gradually increasing in severity and intensity. So he starts with a simple thing. And then when Pharaoh feels the pain, he will say, okay, Moses, take your people, go. And when they're about to leave, it changes in his mind. You know, and God gradually increased the pressure, the severity, the intensity. And eventually, it got to the ultimate one where the firstborns of all creatures had to die. But it shows, and I'm simply saying that God deals with people individually, but there are people who will choose to not believe, regardless of the evidence, and that is sin. And maybe when I get to the definitions of sin in terms of the terminology of the Hebrew, you know, I will show you that there is a hatat, there is an awon, and there's a pesha. And so unbelief is sin when we persist, when we refuse to see the truth. You know, we can talk about the Jews that crucified Jesus. Those people, Jesus resurrected Lazarus. They are supposed to believe. I mean, it's beyond... the man has been in the grave for 4 days. Instead of believing in him, now they that they are going to be exposed because of the miracle he has done. And what do? Now they plan to eliminate the evidence, which is Lazarus. They plan to kill Lazarus because he's going to, you know, that kind of thing, that level of unbelief. We cannot put room there and say, no, they still doubt. They, you know, God has given them enough evidence. Now it's basically at the level of being rebellious.
I see.
At that stage, which is the highest form of sin. Now you are rebelling against revealed truth. You don't need evidence in this stage. So I'm saying there's a room where people, yes, do need to be taught more, or they need more evidence of things, of this and that. And when they are sincere, and you know, sincere seekers after truth, that's the term I wanted. God always reveals himself to those people. We can talk about the wise men from the East, you know, who were astrologers, you know, who did not believe in the maybe in God and the doctrines, and they were not always doctrinally correct, but the little knowledge that they had, you know, God used it for them to follow the star up until they reached Jesus. So they are sincere seekers after truth, mm-hmm. who will come with their little knowledge, mm-hmm. and God will use that to persuade them, to teach people, and to reveal fully the light that they need. But there are people who will simply choose to be against the light, no matter how much God reveals the light to them. And that's why that definition says, there's one about, I think, is it the one, the number two? For whatever that we proceed from faith is sin. And that's why the Holy Spirit convicts us of sin, because they do not believe in me. That's why we need the conviction of the Holy Spirit, so that we can believe in God. And that's why he says, without faith, it is impossible to please God, for whoever comes to him must believe that he is, and that he's a rewarder of those that diligently seek him. So are we seeking with a reason to believe in God, or are we seeking with the intention to argue and reject, because that makes us feel good about ourselves?
Almost seems like this thing, you know, you have no choice. You've just got to accept so that you are away, you're not, you know, not defined as the one who is sinning, as opposed to God has given us a power of choice, and so you can choose da-da-da-da-da-da. There's no choice here. Accept or die.
Yeah, God has given us the power of choice, and
well, clearly there's no choice.
We do have a choice, and that's why he says, come unto me. Come, let us reason together. When we have reasonable doubts, you know, God does not force himself upon us. When we have questions about what he does and we are not fully convinced, we do, you know, we can ask questions. Is it Genesis chapter 18, verse 25, I think, where Abraham says to God, how can the judge of all the earth do wrong? How can the judge of all the earth allow the righteous to die, to perish with the wicked? That's when God was planning to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And then, you know, eventually Abraham says, to God, can I please speak? You know, I know you are God, you are the judge of all the earth, but are you please allow me to speak? What if there are only 50 people in Sodom and Gomorrah? Will you still destroy the city? And God says no. And the number goes down. Maybe there's 40. God says no. 30? No. 10? No. 10? No. Now, we can engage. God gives us room to engage when we do not understand, when we have doubts about what he's doing and what he's not doing. Jeremiah chapter 12, verse 1. Jeremiah says, God, you are righteous. You are righteous. But please let me ask this question. Why do the righteous suffer? And why do the wicked prosper? We have those questions as individuals, and it's not unbelief. Jesus, while dying on the cross, he says, my God, why have you forsaken me? So I'm simply saying, God does not force himself upon us. And when we have reason to ask questions, you know, he allows us to ask those questions. But there are instances, even in the Bible, many times Jesus said even to his disciples, O ye of little faith, why did you doubt? Because, for example, he would say, let us cross over to the other side. And then he sleeps in the boat. And while in the boat, there are waves and storms, and he's boisterous, and he's restless. But Jesus is sleeping peacefully, very calm. They wake him up, Master, Master, carest thou not that we perish? He wakes up, says, peace, be still. He rebukes the wind, the sea, the storm. Everything is calm. And then after that, he says, oh, ye of little faith, why did you doubt? You know, I can quote instances like that, so many in the Bible. And I think when we're talking about the faith, the unbelief that is sin, it's when we doubt God. when God has already said, you know, cross over to the other side. Mm-hmm. When God says, go take manna, we'll receive manna on a daily basis, every morning. And don't leave for tomorrow. Eat for today what you have today. You will get the fresh one tomorrow. But when you still leave a portion for tomorrow, it is you doubt God, you will not provide tomorrow. But he says, if you leave it tomorrow, it will be rotten.
Mm.
And then on Friday, he says, on the preparation day, he says, take double. Because on Sabbath, it's a holy day. You need to keep it holy. And then because we are human beings, we choose to not to doubt God. On morning, they wake up and go to collect. Those are situations of unbelief that we are talking about. When God has spoken, when God has promised, and we refuse to take him at his word.
I see. Now, Pastor, tell me, is there a general, you know, a definition across the board, you know, of sin? I mean, I'm thinking here, you know, that, you know, in our setup as human beings, in one country, it may be illegal to do something, but in one country, the same thing is not illegal. You know, you find that in many countries, a certain practice is acceptable. In another country, it is frowned upon. Now, in as far as sin is concerned and how God looks at this, is it a one size fits all definition?
Yeah, I'm going to put my head on the blog and say it's a one size fits all definition, because the law of God is a transcript of its character and it is eternal.
Mm.
You know, the law of God, the Ten Commandments were written with the finger of God himself. Now, in fact, if I were to take them one by one, you know, talking about the sins, you know, of a horizontal nature, in any country that I know of, killing is still wrong. Stealing is wrong everywhere. Lying is wrong, although it may not be a crime. It's not always a crime, but it's still considered not a good thing. And if you were to misrepresent yourself at the bank or when applying for a job in a CV where, legal matters are concerned, it's still a sin and a crime. You know, being a false witness against your neighbor is still wrong, because if you go to court, even today, in any court in the world, and misrepresent somebody else, and be a false witness, you will still be charged.
Mm.
Covetousness is one that is difficult to monitor. That one is an internal sin that we cannot be charged for. But that is the root of all sins,
mm-hmm.
because we steal because we covet, we lie because we covet, we kill because we covet. So sin, yes, it's a one size fits all, but in terms of how sometimes God deals with people, because we have different levels of light, maybe at different times, there are things that God can wink at, if that's the proper word, at a certain time for certain people, because now we do not have the certain level of knowledge or light. We have not been exposed to the same thing. So it is God. That's why only God is the ultimate judge, because he knows how much we have been exposed to. I can give an example, maybe with can I say polygamy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, God created Adam and Eve, only one Adam and only one Eve,
mm-hmm.
not Adam and Steve.
Mm-hmm.
So countries now, there are many countries that are pro-homosexuality, but God has not sanctioned that. But there's also polygamy, which you don't see in the Bible necessarily punished. In fact, most of God's heroes in the Bible, Abraham had multiple wives, Jacob, we can talk about David and Solomon. And so you don't see it being punished, but God has warned against it. And that's why in the New Testament, when it comes to the election of elders, it will say he must be a husband of one wife.
Mm.
Come to deacons, he must be a husband of one wife, because that standard Now, the Old Testament, the New Testament takes it back to where it was originally. So when we do evangelism, what do we do when we go to KZN and King, what's his name, the current one? I don't want to say King Zoliti.
Mrs. Zulu, yeah.
Multiple wives, and he accepts the truth. But now, you know, are we going to say, but David had multiple wives, and so he can continue? And that's where it gets difficult sometimes. You know, when certain things God winked at in the Bible, and but we understand that as Adventists, it should be a monogamous relationship. What do we do in such situations?
Interesting that you mentioned polygamy, Mfundisi. It's going to really put us in a hole, and we're not going to finish this discussion, because I could actually, you know, God has expressed himself, for instance. He says, I hate, you know, divorce. He's expressed himself, he detests it, etc., etc. And these guys practice polygamy, and he doesn't express himself on that. And so, I mean, he works with them and stuff like that. He doesn't really call it a sin. Per se, yeah, of course, it's not his ideal. I mean, much as like, you know, eating of meat, he never designed the eating of meat, yet it's not called a sin per se. But I get where you are getting at. I'm not sure, though, if the example will get us where we need to get to.
Okay. Yeah, it can be a study on its own that needs...
It will need its own
time. Yeah, but I think I have responded by saying that, yeah, I will put my head on the blog and say, sin, by the way, yeah, there's a one-size-fits-all kind of thing which says sin is the transgression of the law. However, we may not all be equally exposed to that law, and that's why only God is the judge who will judge according to what you know and what you do not know.
Now, Pastor, we're literally almost over time. 1 minute to go, and we finish this discussion today. We're going to be discussing the issues of ethics and morality, you know, as it relates to sin. But today, this is going to be long, actually. Our time is completely... I think we'll deal with it tomorrow, because I wanted us to get to the history of sin, and how did we get ourselves to this situation? And I'm now, you know, as I'm looking at this question, I'm reminded of this past week's lesson, which was lesson number one, and I'm thinking we literally only have about 35 seconds, and we're not going to be able to do justice to that. So can we actually deal with this tomorrow? Are you happy with that?
Yes, we will start from Isaiah chapter 14 and Ezekiel chapter 28 to address this question tomorrow.
Okay. Pastor, thank you so much for today, and I do want to say thank you so much for joining us. It's been a wonderful discussion. I think that there's quite a lot that we are going to learn from this particular subject of sin this week. I pray that the Lord grants you the wisdom as you unpack this extremely important subject for us. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you.